Today the church gives us very profound readings, and our first reading brings us back to the beginning, to the creation of man and woman. And I think by looking at the creation stories where God creates the man and the woman, it helps us to understand Jesus' challenging teaching about marriage, which is Jesus' explicit teaching. So in the book of Genesis, there are two creation stories. The first one is in Genesis chapter 1, and that's the account where God creates the world and the universe and everything in it in 6 days, and then on the seventh day, he rests. And one of the things that we learn through that creation story is that the man and the woman whom God creates last, as the crown of his creation, are created in the image and likeness of God. So that makes them unique among all of God's creatures. And then God gives them a stewardship over the whole earth. He says to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. So that's what happens in the first creation story, which is in Genesis chapter 1. The second creation story is a little bit different. That's in Genesis chapter 2. And that's the story that we heard in our first reading today. Now, it's important for us to remember that as Catholics, we don't read the creation stories in Genesis, the first one and the second one, as scientific accounts of creation or even as historical accounts of creation. But rather, we read those creation stories as revealing to us the truth about who God is and who we are as his creation. So there's not a problem that we have two different accounts of creation, because God doesn't intend for us to read either of them as a scientific or a historical account. But that doesn't mean they're not true. They're true in the deepest sense, in that they reveal to us who God is and who we are. So in that second creation story, which we heard today, we see that the man is created first. And God creates him out of the dust of the earth, and then he puts the man in this beautiful garden, the Garden of Eden. And the Garden of Eden is a beautiful place. It's lush and green, and it has four rivers flowing through it. And the man has everything that he possibly could want. Except there's something wrong. And what's interesting is that if we think back to the first creation story, where God creates the world in 6 days, what does he say at the end of every day? He looks back at what he created, and he says it's good. So each of those 6 days, God creates, and he says it's good what he created. So in this story, in 2 Genesis, the second creation story, for the first time in the Bible, God looks at something and he says it's not good. And what is that? He says it's not good. Well, we heard it in our first reading today. He says it's not good for the man to be alone. So that tells us something really important about who we are, that we're not created to be independent. You know, it's interesting how independence is such an important virtue in our culture and society. This is something that parents work very hard to achieve in their children, this independence, so they won't need to rely on others. And certainly there's good things about being independent, in the sense it's good that we become responsible people. It's good that we learn how to work and to value work. It's good when we have those virtues that help us to be good citizens, persevering through difficulties. But what's interesting is, as much stress as we put on independence, independence is not a value found in the scriptures. And we see it right from the beginning. Why? because it's not good for the man to be alone. God didn't create the man to be alone. And so he creates a partner for the man. And he puts the man to sleep. He takes a rib from the man's own body. And out of that rib, then God forms a partner for him, a woman. And the man, as soon as he sees her, says, "At last, this one is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh." So the man is overjoyed at this gift that God has provided to him in the woman. And so, again, we don't read this as a scientific or historical account, but what does this tell us about man and woman? It tells us that God created the woman for the man and the man for the woman, that they were created for one another, and that they're a gift of God for each other. This is part of the way that God was showing his love for the man, is that he created a woman for him to be his helpmate and his partner. This is something that St. John Paul II talked about. He talked about a lot about men and women and their relationships. And he says, even the bodies of the man and the woman do not make sense on their own, but only in light of each other's bodies do the man's and the woman's own bodies make sense. So it's further evidence that God didn't create us to be independent operators, but he created us for union with another. For a man to have union with a woman, and for a woman to have union with the man. And so this is why the writer of the book of Genesis tells us that the man and the woman leave their parents and they cling to one another and they become one flesh with one another. So on the one hand, certainly that's referring to how the man's and the woman's bodies fit together and are made for each other and together achieve a union that's really the most profound love, because it involves not just our souls but also our bodies. But God also created the soul of the man and the woman to be complementary. This is why we have titles of books like Women Are from Venus and Men Are from Mars, or whatever the planets are that they're associated with. Because men and women are different. Bodily, yes. But any married couple will quickly tell you that they're very different in many other ways beyond their bodily differences. That men think differently than women do. And men and women approach the world differently. They pray differently, relate to God, relate to others differently. And those differences are good. God created women with particular gifts that he doesn't give to the man. And he created men with particular gifts that he doesn't give to the woman. And then he calls them into a communion so that together they'll have the gifts that they need to be able to have a foundation of life. It's really important for us to see this and to think about this, because in our society we can be so individualistic and we think that the individual is the be-all and the end-all, but actually God created us in families so that it's actually the family that's the most basic unit of society, because God didn't create us to be independent. He created us to be dependent on another. So this union of body and soul that God calls the man and woman into, he calls marriage. And we aren't talking about a one-night stand here. We're talking about a total commitment of self to the other. a commitment of faithfulness, a commitment of permanence, and a total gift of self. And so that's why Jesus can give us such teaching that 50 years ago probably didn't seem very radical, but that seems so radical today because of the ways that marriage is tried and tested in our society. When Jesus talks about how what God has joined together, and he's talking about the sacrament of marriage here, how the sacrament of marriage achieves a spiritual union between the man and the woman. And he says, when God has made that between two people, it can't be separated. It's impossible to separate, actually. So there are some people who will complain about the church's teaching on marriage and divorce, and it's so strict, but we just get it from Jesus. It's no stricter than Jesus' teaching. And it's actually the church's desire to be faithful to the teaching of our Lord and Master that we have the marriage laws in the church that we do. And so this is why if two baptized persons get married, or if Catholics get married in the Catholic Church, we believe that that's a sacramental marriage. And what happens with a sacramental marriage? Well, it's exactly what the scriptures tell us it is. The two become one. And if they're now one, it's impossible to pull them apart. So that's why the church teaches that if people do suffer divorce, and it's important for us to recognize that divorce is always an unfortunate reality. Sometimes it's necessary. So the church doesn't say that divorce is never something that can happen. But what the church still says is that because of the teachings of Jesus, we have to respect the indissolubility of marriage. That what God has joined together, we can't separate. So just because two people get a civil divorce doesn't mean that there's not still a sacramental bond there. And so that's why we have what's called a declaration of nullity. If someone is divorced and wants to get remarried in the church, well, if they have a sacramental marriage with another person, it's impossible for them to marry another. Because you can only have one bond with another person at one time. But what a declaration of nullity says, and a declaration of nullity is not a Catholic divorce like some people call it, a declaration of nullity doesn't separate anything. It simply says that there wasn't a sacramental marriage there to begin with. Now, I could talk for a long time about the different reasons that it's possible that on a couple's wedding day, they don't have a sacramental marriage, even though to everybody else and to them, it appears that they do. But this is the church helping us to understand that sometimes a sacramental marriage doesn't happen. And if a sacramental marriage doesn't happen, then a person is free to remarry. But that's a process that they have to go through with the church. The most important thing for us is that we see the beauty of how God created us and how God called us. And the beauty and the importance of the relationship between man and woman. Marriage is hard. And every married couple here will quickly agree with that. That marriage is hard. It takes a lot of work. The beautiful thing about marriage, however, is that what God does in it is he allows us to stop living for ourselves, which is really what we often end up doing when we're younger. We're achieving our own dreams, trying to meet our own goals. But when we get married, all of that changes. Because when we marry another, we have to cease being number one in our life, ourselves. And number one in our life has to become that other person. And that's how a marriage is going to be happy and last. If the most important person in your life is not yourself, but the other. So that the focus is on caring for the other. And your spouse's focus is caring on you. And that's the beautiful thing about marriage, is that we don't have to worry about caring for ourselves because we're cared for by the other. And then in that mutual gift of self that the couple makes, a firm foundation can be laid that can last 65 years. This weekend I just had the funeral of a man who died, and next week he and his wife would have celebrated 65 years of marriage. That's amazing. But the reason that that can happen is because the other person is number one, and that other person has you as the spouse number one. So brothers and sisters, let's give thanks to God for the gift of marriage, the gift of the way that he created us, not to be independent, but to be dependent on another. Let's ask the Lord to bless marriages and families, to strengthen them, that marriages and families would be free of selfishness, but always wanting to give and to care for the other. And we who are, for those who are married and in family life, let's pray that they would be able to live this way, giving up their own sense of independence and seeking more and more reliance upon and dependence upon the other.